From CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruyak. A $54 billion budget deficit for the state of California. That's the projection released about an hour ago by the California Finance Department. On the phone is H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director for External Affairs with the department. And H.D., thanks for joining us today.
Morning, Beth.
So give me some of your reaction when you and others at the department realized the magnitude of this projected deficit.
Well, we knew that there was going to be a substantial hit to revenues because of the unprecedented economic damage that's been caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. But when we finalized, or in the process of finalizing the size of the deficit for the May revision, it really brings it home in stark detail. $54.3 billion is a remarkable amount, not seen in any time since the Great Recession of 2009. The more troubling thing, I guess, is that we started out the year in very good fiscal shape, probably better than any other state in the country. We paid off all of our past borrowing. The wall of debt was gone. We had a $5.6 billion surplus. The governor, Governor Newsom, proposed a balanced budget not only for next year but the following 3 years. And we've reflected a record level of reserves next year of about $21 billion, of which $16 billion is socked away in the state's rainy day fund. To give you an idea of the magnitude of what we've got to deal with right now, the size of that $54 billion deficit is 3.5 times the size of the revised balance of $16 billion in that fund, which underscores two things. Number one, very difficult decisions on how to close that lie ahead. The governor will put out his proposal a week from today when he releases his May revision. The legislature is going to have to make decisions on that, too, because they have to pass a balanced budget by June the 15th. And it also underscores the critical need, in the governor's view, for further assistance by the federal government, not just for California, but for all states and for local governments, so that we don't see the kinds of very devastating impacts on core services that state and local governments are providing in such areas as public health and public safety. Governor Newsom last month wrote to Speaker Nancy Pelosi and recommended a nationwide package of $1 trillion, not just for California, but for all 50 states and for their local governments, for cities and counties, because the scope and severity of this crisis are unprecedented. Speaker Pelosi, according to news reports, is working with her colleagues in the House of Representatives on another round of pandemic relief. The $1 trillion figure has been discussed in that dialogue, and the governor looks forward to working with the speaker and other members of the California congressional delegation and other governors as well, so we can move this issue forward, we hope. Because, again, we have, in California, we've managed well. We've balanced budgets. We've built reserves. We've paid off debt. And despite that, the scope and severity of this pandemic and the economic impact is breathtaking.
From this report, H.D., it acknowledges already $1 billion allocated toward this COVID-19 crisis, but it reads, for cash flow purposes, an additional $6 billion in response-related expenditures is projected in 2020. $6 billion more. But it's possible, isn't it, that that number will be higher in this year?
That's certainly possible. We hope it's going to be lower because we hope, as Governor Newsom has said repeatedly, that Californians keep doing what they've been doing, which is following the stay-at-home guidelines, practicing social distancing, and flattening the curve. That said, our most recent estimate, and we'll update this next week, is that we project the state's going to be spending about $7 billion in calendar year 2020 for efforts to combat the virus and to prevent its spread. The good news for that is, under a federal disaster declaration, we will be receiving reimbursement from the federal government from that, at least 75 cents on the dollar. But even with that federal reimbursement, we are still looking at a remarkably large deficit that is going to require difficult decisions in order to close, which underscores the severity of the problem, number one. And number two, in the governor's view, the critical nature of Washington to work as partners with states to weather this crisis and to avoid significant reductions in core services in to citizens at the state and the local level.
In terms of where general state fund dollars go, schools get almost 35% of general fund dollars. That's the highest category. The next category down, I believe, is Medi-Cal at about 15.5%. If difficult decisions lie ahead, and that phrase is specifically used in this fiscal report, do the slices of the pie get cut proportionately? I know I'm asking you to sort of project the work of the lawmakers here right now, but with schools getting the majority of this, are the cuts to schools going to be, is that something to be anticipated in a deeper way?
Well, let's just look at, regardless of what the governor will propose next week or what the legislature will take up, let's look at how the Constitution works right now. Back in 1988, the people of California passed something called Proposition 98, which provided a constitutional funding guarantee for K through 12 schools and community colleges. That level of funding rises and falls on the natural with changes in state revenues. Under that calculation right now, if nothing is done, the revenue decline would result in lower funding for K through 12 schools and community colleges by more than $18 billion. Now, that said, that's just the ministerial mechanics of how the constitutional formula works. The governor is going to address how we look at that next Thursday when he puts his plan before the legislature, as well as how he proposes to deal with the other significant areas of general fund spending, and as you noted, health and human services programs, and namely Medi-Cal, are the second largest area behind K through 12 education. And Medi-Cal is critical because roughly 14 million people in California, one out of every three, receive their health care through Medi-Cal. So that is going to be a challenge on how we deal with that. Number one, and number two, as I was mentioning a moment ago, in order to avoid the kinds of reductions that will affect vulnerable populations, to protect our safety net programs, to do the least amount of damage in this unprecedented economic recession that we are weathering right now. That is why Governor Newsom believes it is critical for the federal government to work as partners with all 50 states, regardless of political affiliation, because this is a national problem that requires a national partnership to work through. We are going to get through this on an economic basis. There's no question about that. The governor has made it very clear that we're resilient people in California. We've got through the Great Recession in 08. We got through the dot-com collapse in 2001. We got through the 91-92 recession when the defense and aerospace industries collapsed in California. That said, we've got difficult decisions that are going to lie ahead of us to get through this. The governor will step up next Thursday and provide what he believes is a roadmap to get there. The legislature is going to have to confront those difficult decisions as well, because they have a requirement to pass a balanced budget by June the 15th.
If you're just joining us, I'm talking with H.D. Palmer, Deputy Director for External Affairs with the Finance Department. We're talking about a $54.3 billion projected deficit for the state of California in this May revision forecast. H.D., I want you to listen to something that the governor said yesterday at the very end of his press conference. He had been asked by a reporter how confident he is that California can rebound from the shutdown, something you were just referring to, and in particular, he was asked how long he thinks it will take. So here's what he said.
It's going to take longer than I think a lot of people think. We've never experienced anything like this in our lifetime. This is depression era numbers in terms of the unemployment you'll see across this country, not just in the state of California. Again, please just do the math on the number of unemployed Californians that have filed just since March 12th.
So our math is about 3.6 million. It's being called 4 million Californians. Did you hear what he said? Depression era numbers. Will you respond to that?
Unfortunately, the governor's right when he said, do the math and look at the numbers. One of the things that is unique, unfortunately, about the recession that we're in right now is that compared to prior recessions, such as the Great Recession in 2009, or the dot-com collapse in 2001. That hit sectors of California's economy hard, whether it's the tech sector or whether it was in, you know, the collapse of the subprime mortgage industry. even during those recessions, people were still going to restaurants. People were still going to ball games. Tourists from California and around the world were still going to hotels and going to Disneyland and Universal and visiting San Francisco and Hollywood. That hasn't happened in this one because we've had wholesale shutdowns of economic sectors in California of an unprecedented nature. That's reflected in our forecast of 18% unemployment for the calendar year of 2020. It's also reflected in the new numbers that are out this morning from the Labor Department, right, in terms of unemployment claims. To give you an example of that, we had more than 300,000 claims filed last week, bringing the total amount of claims,
right,
since this pandemic occurred to 4 million claims in California. To put that into perspective, the entire population of the city of Sacramento is only 1.5 million people. The entire population of the city of Los Angeles is 4 million people. So to put it in some very painful perspective, we've had the number of unemployment claims that have been filed in the last 6 weeks is equal to the amount of individuals who live in the city of Los Angeles. That, in the governor's, as the governor was saying, look at the numbers and do the math, and you can understand the scope and severity of what we are painfully living through at this moment.
And it's still a sliding issue that we are in the midst of, but I want to thank you for your time today, and I'll refer people to capradio.org and throughout the day for more information. HD, I appreciate the report and the conversation today. Thanks for joining us on Insight.
Thank you, Beth.
That's H.D. Palmer. He's Deputy Director of External Affairs with the California Finance Department. This news, of course, comes in the midst of what is a patchwork of cautious and phased reopenings across the state. You probably know the Yuba Sutter Mall reopened yesterday, and that was a bit of a jump ahead of the state by county leaders. Cap Radio reporter Bob Moffitt was there. He's on the phone with us now. Hi, Bob.
Good morning.
So tell me about being at the mall. I'm sure you had a lot of company yesterday.
Yeah, it was certainly full of.
Well,
the nail salon was packed. There was a line out the door. That was a little surprising.
So let's listen to a clip, a bit of a moment from someone at the mall that you talked to.
I was just disappointed at the fact that not very many customers are wearing masks. I thought that they would take more responsibility and wear masks.
Tell me about the masks, Bob. And I know there was some concern throughout the day, and the Yuba Sutter County Health Director had to speak out about this. Give me more context.
Well, if you've been anywhere in Yuba Sutter County in the last couple of weeks, this is nothing new. And Fong Liu, the health department director for both counties, had already planned to send out a letter to businesses before the mall opened. So it wasn't directly a result of the mall opening. But, yeah, it's you go to Home Depot or Walmart on any given Sunday, and it's busier than it was at Christmas. And by far, maybe, 80% of the people are not wearing masks. People are taking their children to the store. Sometimes you have to, and people understand that, of course. But as far as the county directive goes, which is if you have to go out in public, you need to cover your face if you cannot maintain social distancing. Well, some places you can't maintain social distancing.
Right.
So that's kind of that he was surprised that people weren't wearing masks. Well, people don't actually have to wear masks if they can maintain social distancing, but when you have people crossing paths and you have people going in different directions, it's not really, it's not like you're standing right next to somebody, but you're still not always able to maintain that 6 feet of distance. The people that work in the mall, with the exception of the one person who works at the barbershop, who said she's never worn a mask, almost all the clerks and employees were wearing masks, but the customers were not.
All right, Bob, real quickly, was there anything said about the mall being closed again if there was kind of too much risk in the public being there?
Well, and again, the county order, the county letter that went out to businesses yesterday was not it, the timing of it was the same day, but it wasn't a direct result of the mall reopening, according to the county. It was directed at all businesses, including Walmart and Home Depot, where large groups of people have gathered. And that letter fully states, if you don't control the situation, if you don't get people apart from each other and mandate masks when they can't be separate, then, yeah, we make.
Okay.
Which are.
Hey, Bob, your phone keeps going out, but I think we caught the end of the sentence, which was, yeah, we may close you down. So thanks very much. That's Cap Radio's Bob Moffitt reporting about the opening yesterday of the Yuba Sutter Mall in Yuba County. It is also National Nurses Week, and it continues with recognition, and you may have seen some of the remarkable tributes for the millions of nurses who are right now on the front lines of the COVID-19 battle or in the midst of this time that we're in. On the phone is Toby Marsh. He is Chief Nursing Officer at UC Davis Medical Center. Hi, Toby. Thanks for taking a moment to talk with us today.
Hi, Beth. How are you?
Well, I'm good. I feel so proud and grateful for all the work the nurses are doing. Can you tell me from your side about an experience that's defining this battle, maybe a moment or an image that your mind keeps going to?
You know, for me, as I walk the different nursing units throughout the hospital, it is the brave clinicians and nurses who are at the bedside with our patients, and specifically at this time with patients who are isolated for their protection and our staff's protection for COVID-19. And it's the nurses who are going into the rooms and comforting those patients, holding their hands when their family members cannot be there, and them showing up for work every day and doing what they do every single day. And that's the phenomenal care that they provide and we're proud of.
I think so often about the fact that nurses have to stand there for and on behalf of families right now. I do want to mention this Year of the Nurse blog, which is wonderful. Your story is there, but it's an opportunity to feel like there's some one-on-one connection with the people who are taking these shifts right now. So that's a cool project.
It is. And, you know, with me, I have Kelly Hamilton and Al Nutt, who both participated in our nursing story blog as part of the Year of the Nurse and Nurses Week. And one of the nice things about this story blog is so often we hear the gratitude from our patients about the care and the impact that we provide. But this nursing story blog is really our opportunity to share those intimate moments that we have with our patients and to share those with our other colleagues, but our community as well, and to see what it is that we do together and for our community, and what it means to us to be so privileged to have times to be in the lives of our patients that are so vulnerable and so intimate, and we feel so honored and privileged to share those stories with you.
That's Toby Marsh, Chief Nursing Officer at UC Davis Medical Center. We'll post a link to that Year of the Nurse blog. Al Nutt is standing by, as Toby just said. And Al, great to have you on the show. Can you share with me some of your first awareness, really, of COVID-19, the bigness of what this was doing to our community?
Yeah, thanks for having me once again, Beth. You know, I think that The real change that I've felt in the midst of this pandemic as a nurse really is just, you know, we do this on a day-to-day basis, but it really almost feels like we've been called up to the big leagues now at this point in time, that we, you know, this is why I became a nurse, was to help people when they are in the midst of a crisis and, you know, they're in the most powerless and vulnerable states and oftentimes the lowest points of their lives. And it really is, you know, inspiring and an honor to be able to be there for those people and uplift them in this time, especially when they are being isolated from, you know, visits from family members. A lot of people are, you know, scared that they will catch what they may potentially have at that point in time. And being able to be there and be that, you know, shining light in this person's life in a time of darkness is really, you know, inspiring within myself, and that this is why I do what I do.
Al Nutt is a medical intensive care unit nurse at UC Davis Medical Center. Kelly Hamilton is also a medical intensive care nurse at UC Davis. And Kelly, thanks for joining us as well. Being in that ICU is the most forward of the front line. What do you say to yourself every day as you get ready to take on another shift?
Thank you so much for that question, Beth. I think what I try to remind myself when I get ready for the shift is just to slow down, take some deep breaths, focus on the present moment, and remind myself that, you know, this is my job. We, as nurses, care for people who are critically ill, and that we have the opportunity to help that person who's critically ill feel connected with someone other than just themselves. Because like Al was saying, our patients are so isolated right now from their loved ones too. It's an honor to be able to go in there and sit with people in these really difficult times and provide them some human connection and compassion.
Well, I thank you all for your service to all of us, and much, much gratitude and many good wishes for good health. Thank you. And keep going. Keep going.
Thank you so much, Beth, for having us on your show.
That's Kelly Hamilton, Al Nutt, and Chief Nursing Officer Toby Marsh from UC Davis. We'll post a link so you can see their stories at capradio.org/insight. National Nurses Week continues, so remember to thank or think of a nurse that you know. Up next, we're going to shift to your mental health and talk a bit about anxiety. This is Insight on Cap Radio.